content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, this is Patricia for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Time Magazine. Today's program is supported by G. Suggs Insurance, a SureVest insurance group company. They can be reached at gsuggsinsurance.com. That is gsuggsinsurance.com. For the next hour, I'll be reading to you from Time Magazine. I'm turning first to the edition dated August 17, 2026. If that material is not sufficient, I'll go to July 27, 2026 edition of Time. In the August 17 edition, the front cover is, as usual, bordered in red with a narrow white inner border. Time, in large block capital lettering, is in white, superimposed upon a pale, grayish-greenish-white background, so Time is really hard to see here. There are three people whose faces are depicted on the cover: Marco Rubio, Dulce Rodriguez, and Donald Trump. There's a flag flying behind them. There are smaller photos of additional people: an oil well derrick, an airplane, a palm tree, a ship at sea, and a cityscape. The caption reads, "The Venezuela experiment inside Donald Trump's unlikely alliance with Dulce Rodriguez." That has already been read on this program a couple of weeks ago. So I'm turning now to the technology section. And the article is entitled, "The Robots Cometh." The Robots Cometh. The humanoid revelation is nigh. And the Chinese firm Unitree, U-N-I-T-R-E-E, is leading the charge. Charlie Campbell writes from Hangzhou. Let's see if anyone else has contributed. Nope. Charlie Campbell alone has the byline. Photographs are by Mattia Balsamini for Time. I will share with you a couple of the photographs right now before heading into the text. First of all, there's a young man depicted here. He's wearing a white shirt, no tie. He has short, finely groomed, straight black hair, dark eyes, wearing glasses. He has thick black eyebrows. The caption reads, "Wang Jingjing was 26 when he founded Unitree. The company's H2 robot is on display at its headquarters, and the robot is depicted side by side in the photo with Wang Jingjing. The robot is silvery looking, with black hands, black hip sockets, I'll call them, a black waist that is probably about 6 inches in circumference. The face is humanistic looking. There's nothing in the way of hair, but there might even be imprints for ears on the side of the robot's head. It has large eyes staring into space or at you or me, whichever it is. And again, it's a silvery gray. It looks very metallic with these black accents. It has a mouth. It has a chin. It has a forehead. And that is the H2 robot. All right, now to the text. Spectators typically leave a UFC fight with ringing ears and a sheepish resolve to get back to the gym. Wang Jingjing went straight to his laboratory. "I thought I could make a bigger robot for boxing competition," says Wang, founder and CEO of Hangzhou-based humanoid robotics firm Unitree. "Then I thought, why not do an even bigger one that can actually carry a human inside?" The upshot of Wang's creative fervor is the GD-01, which Unitree builds as the world's first mass-produced, transformable mecha robot. standing 9 feet tall and weighing half a ton, 1,000 pounds, if I'm not mistaken. It can transport a pilot in its torso-mounted cockpit, walk on either two legs or four, wield fists powerful enough to knock down walls. Heavy-duty mechanical hinges connect titanium alloy limbs, that would be the silvery gray, to a protective casing of carbon fiber, probably the black accents, enabling smooth, deliberate strides on brutish red legs. Well, we see only portions of the legs in the photo, and they're still silvery gray. Maybe they're red closer to the feet. Wang showed off the GD-01 exclusively to Time as part of his first international media interview, revealing that beyond mixed martial arts, he took a dash of inspiration from James Cameron. We actually drew some references from a similar robot featured in Avatar. Wang has done more than arguably anyone else to bring this science fiction closer to reality. A native of China's coastal city of Ningbo, he founded Unitree in 2016 when he was just 26 years old, and has moved from robot dogs to humanoid robots and now with GD-01 human mobility machines. But while the GD-01 might inspire awe, humbler humanoids like Unitree's flagship G1. Okay, G1 is what we were looking. No, it's not either. Well, we'll get to this maybe. G1 are the ones set to become the workhorses of a global robotics transformation already gathering pace in China, the U.S., and beyond. By the way, in Wang Jingjing's photograph here, he looks very serious. There is no smile emanating from his lips, just as there is none from the robot's lips. This is the next great tech frontier, one that has previously been the purview of Star Wars and Blade Runner, AI that walks, sees, hears, and physically interacts with the real world. Morgan Stanley predicts that as many as 13 million humanoids could walk among us by 2035, equivalent to the population of Bolivia. That number is forecast to rise to 1 billion by 2050, when the industry could be worth $5 trillion. Unitree is hardly alone staking a claim in this space. In January, Tesla announced the third generation of its Optimus humanoid robot, with a goal to eventually produce 10 million units per year at factories in Fremont and Texas. Fremont what? I don't know. In late June, California-based Figure, F-I-G-U-R-E, dispatched its latest 03 humanoid to BMW's Spartanburg plant in South Carolina, where its earlier 02 model helped assemble 30,000 cars last year. Oregon-based Agility, meanwhile, has secured deployments everywhere, from Toyota to Latin American e-commerce giant Mercado Libre. But Unitree's the world leader in terms of volume, dispatching more than 5,500 units in 2025, comprising over a quarter of a global market that is only just waking. In June, NVIDIA announced its bleeding-edge Jetson Tour chip would be fitted into Unitree's H2 humanoid for sale to research institutions around the globe. Okay, it's the H2 whose photograph I described earlier. We could be, Wang says, anything from 2 to 10 years away from a chat GPT moment for humanoids, whereby a robot achieves sufficient generalization to be able to execute 80% of requested voice commands in an 80% unfamiliar environment. Once the technology surpasses this inflection point, robots can gradually be rolled out for large-scale commercial use, he says. If the timeline for that breakthrough is a matter of debate, its potential impact is not. Non-union robots, the only kind, could operate around the clock on assembly lines, replace some nurses in hospitals, and pick fruit under the hot sun. The positive outlook is that wide-scale humanoid adoption will herald an unprecedented era of global abundance, automating mundane and dangerous labor while ushering in post-scarcity societies. There is a less rosy divination, however. Amid a mass labor displacement, robots concentrate even more wealth into fewer human hands. With production severed from wages, people could face an identity crisis as robots begin to dominate manual labor and service industries, while governments contend with strained social safety nets and rising competition between the U.S. and China, leaders in humanoids as they are in AI, over raw material and technology. Those questions are already reaching policymakers. July 28, the Federal Communications Commission banned imports of humanoid robots after the Trump administration determined they posed a national security risk. Officials warned the machines could collect sensitive data, be used to surveil Americans, or be remotely commandeered by foreign actors. China's embassy in Washington criticized the move and vowed to take all necessary measures in response. With AI, we've already seen how the ability of large language models, LLM, to parse huge reams of data also makes them susceptible to hallucinations and unintended consequences like designing biological weapons. But while an LLM can suggest harm, a robot can enact it, auguring a terrifying new cybersecurity peril in the age of embodied AI. Online scams already siphon off staggering sums, but a hacked humanoid could move the threat from screens into homes, streets, nurseries, factory floors. The tension between these visions can be reduced to a choice of myth. Or Wang and his GD-01, and indeed their competitors, akin to Luke Skywalker and the faithful, guileless C-3PO, or more like Frankenstein and his monster. Wang unsurprisingly veers toward the positive, predicting that in 10 years every household may have a small robot that can do your laundry, grill your steak, even provide basic care if you fall ill. They can also take on tasks most humans would rather avoid, from steep mountain farming to sewer maintenance. But if that sounds like a future arriving faster than society can absorb it, Wang insists the transition will be gradual. It will evolve step by step, he says. If society finds robots do not perform well in a certain sector, or if people simply do not like them there, we can easily pivot and redirect their application to other fields. So, everything remains well within controllable boundaries. Wang is an unlikely prophet of the AI age, slight and bespectacled. He possesses none of the performative bravado associated with many technology founders. Instead, he speaks about robotics with quiet, unwavering conviction. The possibilities and promises of a humanoid revolution have occupied him since he was 10 years old and first watched early televised robotics experiments performed at MIT by Mark Raybert, founder of Boston Dynamics. He spent his free time building model aircraft, conducting experiments, and before long assembling miniature turbojet engines. In 2009, Wang enrolled at Zhejiang SciTech University in Hangzhou, majoring in mechatronics engineering. As a first-year student, he says, he built his first small bipedal robot capable of walking a few steps on less than $30. That same price-conscious approach would underpin Unitree's flourishing. While pursuing a master's degree at Shanghai University, he developed a prototype quadruped robot, X-Dog, which still occupies pride of place in the Unitree headquarters. Departing from the hydraulic-powered designs popularized by his idols at Boston Dynamics, Wang opted for a cost-saving electric motor model, which helped X-Dog win second prize in a national entrepreneurship competition. After graduation and a stint at Shenzhen-based drone trailblazer DJI, Wang launched Unitree with a 2 million RMB, $300,000 in capital from an angel investor. It has since become a cultural phenomenon. An estimated 600 million people watched videos of Unitree's H2 and G1 humanoid robots swinging nunchucks and executing flips as part of February's Spring Festival Gala, China's equivalent to the Super Bowl halftime show. It was the second year Unitree humanoids provided the headline act, and all eyes are on what Wang has planned next time. I have no idea, he confesses with a laugh. I'm pausing here for another photograph. It's the inside of an airplane cabin. There are a few people's faces visible in the seats next to the aisle, but it's at the back of the aisle that the photograph is focused. There are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 people, all dressed in airline uniforms. I don't know what their position is, but there are, I'm going to say, one man and the rest are women. The outfits are blue, dark blue, with either white blouses or a blue shirt. But standing in front of them all is this really short airline helper. It's a robot. It doesn't say how tall it is, but its shoulders are as tall as the top of the airline seats where the people are seated next to the aisle. It's wearing a short-sleeved blue shirt with a striped red and white tie, and its blue vest with its buttons on it that I suppose depict its officialness in the airline industry. And you can see its skinny metal arms and its black carbon tech hands. There's no head, but the man standing next to it has his hand resting on something that I suppose is like the head, and he must be pressing on it because there's a glowing blue, like a fluorescent light, a bluish neon tubing around what might be the face. Okay, here's the caption. Unitree robots have been put to work welcoming train passengers. Okay, this is the inside of a train in Hangzhou in February. So this little robot is like the greeter on the train. Okay, now back to the text. In March, Unitree filed for an IPO that would value the firm at $6 billion, sparking a buying frenzy in mainland Chinese markets for companies that would benefit along with it, such as upstream suppliers. But high expectations are both a blessing and a curse. my goodness, that was a $2 million RMB investment for $6 billion. Well, they're a blessing and a curse. While Unitree's first quarter revenue surged over 68% year-on-year to $62 million, adjusted net profit halved over the same period to just $6 million, which the company blamed on a significant spike in R&D and sales costs. Wang talks about a flip side to viral internet fame. Because the hype gets so intense, it places a fair amount of pressure on our company and the industry as a whole, he says. Everyone starts expecting your technology to leap forward at breakneck pace. But the truth is, deep tech breakthroughs require a certain amount of time. Unitree's blossoming came just as the Chinese government began leaning into AI and robotics, which President Xi Jinping has highlighted as key examples of the new growth drivers. China's Ministry of Industry and Information Technology in turn declared humanoids a disruptive innovation on the same level as smartphones and EVs. Breakthroughs destined to transform human production and lifestyle, making leadership a matter of economic and national security. It is a policy push backed by hard cash. Since late 2024, Chinese cities have put together investment funds worth over $26 billion, according to Morgan Stanley. Unitree has not disclosed the exact level of state support it receives, though as one of Hangzhou's six little dragons, elite local startups, it benefits from the city's $14 billion SciTech fund. China is an ass-kicker next level, Elon Musk told a Tesla earnings call in January. To the best of our knowledge, we do not see any significant humanoid robot competitors outside China. Wang's role leading that charge was evident when he appeared as the youngest member of a high-profile business symposium hosted by Xi last spring. More than 140 Chinese companies now make humanoid robots, yet the perception inside China is Unitree is not just another robotics startup, but a hardware platform designed to replicate what BYD achieved for EVs and DJI did for drones. Wang's strategy is simple but hard to beat. First, control the most difficult core components. Leverage scale to relentlessly drive down costs. Use each product generation to unlock new markets. Unitree has slashed the pre-tax price of its flagship G1 humanoid from $16,000 to $13,500 in just 18 months. Still, with components that cost under $9,000, according to recent estimates by SemiAnalysis, that gives Unitree a handy 33% gross margin. The R1 model now retails for under $5,000, and over 6 years, the price of their robot dogs has dropped from $45,000 to under $2,000. Wang insists Unitree wins through manufacturing cost efficiency. For example, it produces its own actuators, the muscles responsible for movement, which account for 50% to 70% of a humanoid's cost. While the G1 might not boast the peak performance of some Western competitors in terms of load-bearing and durability, it has crossed the good enough threshold for real-world deployment. With the ability to carry 5 kilograms payloads for 10 to 15 minutes continuously without overheating, it's moving out of the R&D labs and into pilot deployments for warehouse logistics and material handling. That said, to date, only a fraction of humanoids sold are employed in actual useful work. The reason is very simple. Today's robots operate at about 30% to 50% of human efficiency for general factory and warehouse tasks, such as stacking and carrying boxes. Only 9% of Unitree's sales go directly into industrial applications, with 17% for commercial venues, such as tourist sites, exhibitions, and retail stores. That leaves 74% of Unitree's humanoid sales to universities, research institutions, and individual developers looking to hone their own AI and motion control capabilities. And the company is far from alone. The entire modern humanoid industry is essentially selling robots to people trying to build better robots. Humanoid robots are just not ready for the mass market, says Grace Shao, who publishes the AI Pro-M newsletter. Wang is unconcerned, however, and compares this trend to the early days of the personal computer, when they were primarily purchased by those in the business. As the software becomes increasingly mature, with more developers joining each year, the proportion of genuine industrial deployments is growing at an incredibly fast pace. For now, Unitree is still wrestling with the same white whale as its legion of competitors, the generalization gap, which Wang calls the biggest headache for the entire global scientific community. While today's back-flipping machines are engineering marvels, they remain stubbornly task-specific. If you want a robot to pick up a pen and move it across a desk, you must program every granular motion. But to make AI truly useful in the physical world, robots must transition from executing rigid scripts to understanding novel commands, like being told simply, "Go to the grocery store." Achieving this milestone will require overcoming two self-reinforcing problems: the scarcity of 3D data and the diversity of deployment environments. Unlike LLMs like ChatGPT, which can parse the virtually boundless internet, robots need manipulation data collected in the real physical world, which is costly and difficult to scale. It must typically be collected manually by repetitively training machines how to perform certain tasks, such as folding shirts, stocking refrigerators, shaking a Mai Tai. Plus, explains Zhang Zhehuan, CEO of Beijing-based humanoid firm Noetix, even if a well-performing manipulation strategy is trained for a specific task, the success rate often drops sharply when the environment changes slightly. For example, object displacement, different lighting, or different tabletop materials. Thanks to firms like Unitree, the hardware for humanoids is advancing quickly. The real battleground is over the robot brains, or vision language action, VLA models, which are designed to turn human inputs into embodied AI performing intuitively and accurately. The VLA space alone will be worth $40.50 billion by 2035, predicts Kaizo Research, a market intelligence firm. And many of tech's biggest players are aggressively pursuing their own models, including NVIDIA's GR00T N1.7, Google DeepMind's RT2X, and Alibaba's Gwen Robot Suite. That battle is increasingly about one thing: collecting data. In New York City, for example, MicroAGI, which counts Unitree as a partner, is sending camera-wearing staff to clean apartments free of charge, simply to generate 3D data to train its physical AI model. But as a dedicated robotics company, Unitree is arguably in a weaker position than Tesla, Xiaomi, or Xpeng, which have diversified revenue streams and established supply chains. So solving this generalization gap is key to maintaining its status as today's market champion. After all, its absolute sales are by any measure minuscule, meaning whoever closes the gap first could easily surge ahead. That article was slightly abridged since it was longer than usual. This is under the heading Space. There is a persistent real presence in global airspace beyond current human control and understanding. This is by Jeffrey Kluger. This might also be abbreviated because it's rather long. There was nothing much happening in Jerome and Benno Lawyer's backyard in Hamel, Minnesota, August 11, 1948. It was noontime in the thick of summer, and the boys, 10 and 8, were idly playing when, as they later described it, something overhead caught their eyes. They looked up and their jaws dropped. Roughly 12 feet up in the air was a dull gray circular object, about 1 foot thick and 2 feet thick, 1 foot thick and 2 feet in diameter, slowly descending between them. They stood transfixed as the object settled onto the ground, making a clattering sound like metal hitting metal. The object rested there a moment and then began emitting a high-pitched whistle that to the boys sounded like a tea kettle. It spun in place once, then shot 20 feet into the air, hovered for a moment, and ascended to 30 feet, maneuvering around tree branches and telephone wires in its path. Finally, it jetted out of sight. Jerome and Benno ran inside and told their parents what they had seen. Their father notified the only authority he could think of, R.R. Sheridan, the local postmaster. Sheridan, in turn, called the FBI field office in St. Paul. To the family's surprise, the Bureau sent an agent. He interviewed the boys and inspected the yard. The spot where the alleged flying saucer had landed was approximately 2 feet in diameter and appeared as though a heavy object had landed there or had touched down, read the statement in the official report. The ground was dented and protruding rocks had been leveled. The boys grew up and moved on. Nothing came of their mysterious sighting, but the government preserved the report all the same, filing it away in a cache of documents it had already begun keeping of both civilian and military accounts of flying, hovering, blinking objects that appeared in the skies, skittering about, sometimes touching down, then vanishing the way they came, just as Jerome and Benno's object had. For 78 years, the boy's story, and hundreds like it, had languished in storage. Till May 8, 2026, when President Donald Trump began a serial release of four tranches of more than 450 official reports going back to the middle of the last century, ordering that they be posted on a Department of Defense website and made available for public perusal. After decades of secrecy, stigma, sometimes silliness, like the conspiratorial tales about recovered spacecraft and alien remains, at a place known as Area 51 in Roswell, New Mexico, the government has at long last begun taking things seriously. What used to be called UFOs and now go by the more decorous handle of UAPs, or Unidentified Anomalous Phenomena, are being given the full investigatory treatment. congressional hearings into the origins of the sightings were held in 2022 and 2023. In 2022, the All Domain Anomaly Resolution Office, AARO, was established to detect, identify, and attribute objects of interest. In December 2023, then-President Joe Biden signed into law the Unidentified Anomalous Phenomena Disclosure Act, requiring the collection, review, and public disclosure of all sightings and encounters. June 12, Capturing the Global Hunger for Answers to the UAP Mystery, Director Steven Spielberg, who has long had a sort of seismographic sense of the popular mood, released his latest film, Disclosure Day, in which a government cover-up of extraterrestrial visitations is exposed. The movie grossed $93 million worldwide on its opening weekend alone. At about the same time, the White House established the UAP Science Advisory Council, a body led by Harvard astrophysicist and cosmologist Avi Loeb, to study national security risks posed by UAPs. I was tasked to create a panel for the White House, AARO, the Director of National Intelligence, the FBI, related agencies, so that all of these organizations are in contact about UAPs, says Loeb. It is clear, based on much better sensors than that we have, that there are objects the intelligence agencies and the Pentagon do not, cannot, figure out. It is not just the government, academia, and Hollywood to do that figuring. Last year, former Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for Intelligence, Christopher Mellon, launched the Nonprofit Disclosure Foundation with the aim of encouraging the release of UAP reports, promoting scientific investigation of sightings, supporting whistleblowers, and formulating policy related to UAPs. June 25 of this year, the group convened a Capitol Hill forum in the Kennedy Caucus Room of the Russell Senate Office Building. The day-long event featured political figures, including Representatives Eric Burleson, Republican Missouri, Anna Paulina Luna, Republican Florida, Andre Carson, Democrat Indiana, Suhas Subramanian, Democrat Virginia, Senator Mike Rounds, Republican South Dakota. Loeb was present, as were other well-lettered experts, discussing the technological, national security, economic, psychological, even religious implications of UAPs. The speakers acknowledged that in some respects they were there at their peril, since publicly discussing flying saucers still carries reputational risk. You're black, you're Muslim, you represent a district in Indiana, Carson said of himself. Now you want to talk about UAPs? But it is a measure of the growing public interest in the phenomena and the mounting evidence that something is out there, that more and more serious people are willing to take that risk. Even former President Barack Obama weighed in on the topic. In a February interview, Obama was asked if extraterrestrial life exists, and he responded, "They're real," hastening to add, "but I haven't seen them. They're not being kept at Area 51. There is no underground facility, unless there is this enormous conspiracy and they hid it from the President of the United States." Obama added, he based his belief in the likelihood of extraterrestrial beings in part on the fact that statistically the universe is so vast, the odds are good there is life out there. That's a point a lot of believers make, especially since NASA's Kepler Space Telescope and other space-based and Earth-based observatories have discovered thousands of exoplanets, or planets orbiting other stars, leading astronomers to conclude Virtually every one of the trillions of stars in the sky has at least one world circling it. As with all things in a loud, messy, pluralistic democracy, public opinion plays a role here too, and Americans are clearly ready for action. According to a poll conducted by the Disclosure Foundation just weeks before the Capitol Hill Forum, 84% of respondents want more information from the government on UAPs, 69% believe UAPs are real, 59% support hearings and transparency laws, just 21% trust the federal government to be telling the complete truth. The responses are bipartisan. A statistically meaningless 1% separates a whopping 89% of Republicans and 88% of Democrats who say they want more information on UAPs. You could be a single-issue candidate running in the U.S., says Jordan Flowers, Disclosure Foundation's executive director. That single issue could be UAP transparency, and you could get elected just based on that. Unlike other single issues like taxation, immigration, climate, which unfold indefinitely over decades, UAP transparency has a fixed end point. The government will tell all it knows, the sightings will be investigated, their origins will be determined to be terrestrial, highly advanced military or other assets, or, epochally, extraterrestrial. My null hypothesis would be, these are human-made objects, being operated by adversarial nations, near strategic assets of the U.S., says Loeb. And if they're not, if they do come from elsewhere, that will be the biggest discovery ever made by humanity. The U.S. Senate does not lend out the Kennedy Caucus Room to just anybody. Opened in 1909, the room is a prepossessing place with carved marble walls measuring 74 feet long, 54 feet wide, 35 feet high, climbing to an ornate ceiling decorated with gilded rosettes and acanthus leaves. The doors of the room open onto the Russell Building's vaulted marble rotunda, which rises three stories high. The caucus room has seen a lot of history. It was the site of hearings on the sinking of the Titanic, the Teapot Dome scandal, Pearl Harbor, the Vietnam War, Watergate, Iran-Contra, and more. Both John and Robert Kennedy announced their presidential runs there. It was thus no small thing the Disclosure Foundation was cleared to use the space to hold its June 25 summit. The 300-plus people in attendance took the event exceedingly seriously. Despite the once flaky, fringy, fantastical topic under discussion, the vibe was clearly not Burning Man, Comic Con, or South by Southwest. One attendee was decked out in a T-shirt featuring a bug-eyed alien playing electric guitar. But for everyone else in the room, business attire was the order of the day. Today, experts that rarely occupy the same room, physicists, historians, economists, intelligence professionals, educators, journalists, policymakers, are gathered here in this room, said Mellon in his opening remarks, to discuss a subject that was, until very recently, untouchable. Of all the panels that appeared throughout the day, it was a morning session on security and defense implications of the UAPs that had the most gravity. The panelists discussed the repeated sightings of UAPs, both by naval pilots and personnel at military bases, raising concern about the permeability of armed American airspace. If the object's origins were indeed found to be extraterrestrial, the technology of the alien species far eclipses any flying machines human beings have ever developed. If they are terrestrial, built and flown by rival nations, they signal an arms race that we are already losing. Retired Naval Lieutenant Ryan Graves had his first encounter with UAPs off the east coast of the U.S. 14 years ago, and more in the 2 years that followed. We came back from a deployment in 2012 and began to upgrade our radar systems, he told Time. And we immediately saw objects in our working area that we were not expecting. There were usually anywhere between 3 and 6 objects within the airspace off the coast of Virginia Beach. Sometimes they were completely stationary at very high winds, sometimes flying at 250 to 350 knots, 288 to 402 miles per hour. The objects, Graves said, were 5 to 15 feet in diameter and appeared to be a gray or black cube inside a clear sphere. They gave off no exhaust and flew in such a way, diving and soaring and suddenly changing direction, that any human passenger would be subject to potentially deadly G-forces. Sometimes they flew so close to the Navy jets, the pilots were required to file hazard reports so other planes operating in the vicinity could be warned. They'd be outside doing these behaviors all day, Graves says. It might appear these objects are using magical physics we do not understand. As part of the pilots' routine rotation, they later shifted their operations to the waters off Jacksonville, Florida. They got no peace there either. The UAPs, says Graves, were either already down there or they followed us down because we had over a dozen incidents. The Naval Flyers Virginia and Florida encounters are by no means the only experience the military's had with UAPs. One of the most compelling is the so-called Tic Tac incident, which occurred off the coast of California in 2004. During an otherwise routine deployment that year, radar personnel repeatedly noticed the reflection of a skittering airborne object they could not explain. Looping and diving, climbing and dropping from an altitude of 80,000 feet to 20,000 feet, to crack the mystery, a team of flyers was scrambled into the sky. Once aloft, they discovered what they estimated to be a 45-foot-long flying machine that bore a striking resemblance to a Tic Tac breath mint. All four of us looked down and saw a Tic Tac object moving very abruptly over the water, said pilot David Fravor in a 2023 appearance before a congressional committee. There were no rotors, no rotor wash, any sign of visible control surfaces like wings. As we pulled nose onto the object within about a half mile of it, it rapidly accelerated and disappeared. Cockpit video preserved the encounter. Military assets on the ground have been harassed too. For 17 straight nights in December 2024, Langley Air Force Base in Hampton, Virginia, was swarmed by objects that appeared overhead 45 minutes after sundown and repeatedly flew over the base. According to one eyewitness, former astronaut Scott Kelly, who in 2022 was tapped to serve on a NASA UAP study team, the objects appeared to be 20 feet long, flying at an altitude of 3,000 to 4,000 feet at a speed of 100 miles per hour. The incursions became serious enough that Langley canceled nighttime training flights and moved its F-22 jets to another air base. More dramatic was a reported sighting by 6 federal law enforcement officers in October 2023 near what the official memorandum described as a sensitive national security area in the western United States. For 2 consecutive days, just at dusk, the witnesses reported observing a luminous mother orb, appearing to produce smaller red orbs, one after another, multiple times over a period of several hours. The red orbs reportedly persisted for several seconds before disappearing. It's clear we've lost control of our airspace. Full stop, says Flowers. Whether this is some form of human intelligence or whether it's something else, I'm not creative enough to say. Many of these things are certainly not drones, says Luis Elizondo, a former intelligence officer with the government's Advanced Aerospace Threat Identification Program, AATIP. They are advanced technology from somewhere. If you're scrambling jets off Langley, you've got a problem. Not everyone's persuaded by the reports. Great claims require great evidence, says John Koslowski, director of AARO, and the evidence just is not there yet. Kelly does not minimize the security risk posed by rogue objects, but does not think they have to have an exotic origin. In science, eyewitness testimony is kind of opinion. It is not data, he says. I've never seen anything that could not be explained. If UAPs are ever confirmed to have an extraterrestrial origin, it will represent what Carlos Ayer, professor of history and religious studies at Yale University and a speaker at the Disclosure Forum, calls a rupture in human civilization. A rupture is something after which nothing is the same, he says. It's similar to the rupture that occurred for the natives of North and South America when Europeans showed up. Clinical psychologist Janis Villhauer, a member of the advisory boards of both Loeb's UAP Council and the Disclosure Foundation, spoke at the June 25 event, and her words were sobering. If this news were to come out tomorrow, she says, we're entirely unprepared. An emotional contagion like panic is always possible, but Villhauer does not think most people would react that way, even to such paradigm-shifting news as non-human intelligence. There are certain communities that would look at this through a catastrophic lens, like an end-times event, she says, but I don't see this being something that would spread across the entire population. That does not mean there would not be a psychic impact. A lot, she says, would depend on whether alien life was perceived as either benevolent, indifferent, or hostile. Even a microbe could be hostile if it posed a risk of infection, a peril about which humans have always been mindful. During the first three moon landing missions, returning astronauts were required to spend 3 weeks in medical quarantine against the chance they picked up alien germs. Also playing a role would be the question of what Villhauer calls personal relevance, whether the news of non-human life affected any one person directly. The greatest emotional reaction would occur in people who perceive a high threat level and high personal relevance. The least effect would be in people who see low threat and low personal relevance. Disclosure alone would be a huge, unprecedented event, Villhauer says. Those two things together, personal relevance and threat, could create a really negative response. Mental health will not be the only thing that is affected by UAP disclosure. Spiritual health will be too. As long ago as the 1970s, divinity scholars established the concept of exotheology, a branch of Christian thought that includes the possibility of life in the cosmos. That can come in handy now. Ayer believes the three leading monotheistic religions, Christianity, Judaism, and Islam, will have the most work to do, coming to terms with non-human intelligence. That's because all three of them share the idea there is one God, and He created everything, including human beings. Our species, we like to think, is His crowning creation, a belief that will be harder to hold on to if a cosmic species comes along that's better, smarter, fitter than us. The book of Genesis, which is shared in different ways by Jews, Christians, and Muslims, poses this very troubling story about human origins, says Ayer. Christianity, Ayer believes, will have a special hurdle to overcome in adjusting to the idea of off-earth life because of its teaching that God became human. On the other hand, all three monotheistic religions do have some practice with the idea of intelligent, non-human life. Jews, Christians, and Muslims accept as a given that human beings are not alone in God's creation, says Ayer. There have always been angels. For now, UAPs remain a riddle. They may be real, they may be illusion, they may simply be artifacts of human desire, something we see because we want to see them. A universe with other life forms, after all, is a lot less lonely than one in which we're the only world with lights in the windows. The eyewitnesses, of course, would differ, knowing what they saw, believing what they saw, remaining in some cases transformed by what they saw. In time, if the proof is found, if biological intelligence is discovered in the void, we may all be transformed the same way. And that article was slightly abridged because we have run out of time for today's episode of Time Magazine, which is generously supported by G. Suggs Insurance, a SureVest insurance group company. They can be reached at gsuggsinsurance.com. We hope you enjoyed listening. Please join us next time. I am Patricia, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Time Magazine is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have comments or questions, call us here at the office and studios at 919-832-5138. The number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.